Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Today we are discussing the impact of coronavirus on cannabis investments. Bob, does this signify the burst of the cannabis bubble?
Well, this is a trying time for sure, and I think that we began to see the fractures, at least, in this cannabis bubble nearly a year ago, beginning in April when we started to see the weakening of the Canadian public market. That manifested itself by the summer, by about August, as being a system that was broken from a finance perspective. We saw varying techniques and approaches to investment in this industry over that period of time, which went from investment in technology and into cultivation and into retail, then shifting towards more of a CBD focus, which then quickly moved into more of a broader ag and hemp-based focus. And now what's old is new again, as I see it, and that's kind of focusing back on the marijuana side of the cannabis industry versus the hemp side. So as these things shape, we see the bubble beginning to flatten, if you will, using our parlance of the day. But I don't think the bubble is burst. I think that there's a bigger bubble out there. And perhaps this coronavirus pandemic and the economic scenarios around it will actually lead to more opportunity from a funding, finance, and public opportunity for funding this industry as we get through all of this. The only question now, well, there's many questions now, but the main one is how long is this pause in normality going to last? Is it weeks? Is it months? Or is it much, much longer than that? So those are some of my initial thoughts on the topic. But I don't think the bubble is burst yet. But clearly, the Canadian markets who drove that bubble, they've dried up and varied their strategies tremendously going into 2020. And certainly that revealed itself midway through, if not early 2019.
And it's interesting to hear you talk about opportunities, certainly when we are faced with markets nosediving the way that they are now, there is always that silver lining. I'm thinking specifically about health and wellness products as it relates to cannabis. What do you see opportunity-wise in that sector?
Yeah, I mean, if this lasts as long as people are predicting this this pandemic and the impact on normal life, this will create opportunity. First of all, the opportunities are surrounding, people coming together, maybe softening this divide between us as Americans and maybe between us and the rest of the world. But it will certainly create opportunities that are economic in nature. If you look at the health and wellness sector, as you described, I think as we come out of this, you'll start to see a lot of investment both through the public markets and through the private markets into more health and wellness-based products. Cannabis falls squarely within that purview. That's the sector that can take advantage of this most capably, whether or not mainstream investors and mainstream institutions recognize that cannabis is part of that discussion, that still remains to be seen. While we've seen great movement and progress in cannabis and medical cannabis policy around the world, viewing that as a top five or top 10 answer to health and wellness issues around the world, that's I don't think we're there yet. However, it presents an interesting opportunity. If you're going to invest in companies like Bayer, if you're going to invest in companies like Procter & Gamble, people that make personal consumer goods that bear on health and wellness, I think that those companies will be encouraged, if not driven, towards considering new emerging markets. And that's what cannabis presents from a health and wellness perspective.
Right. There isn't, there's arguably none better than cannabis at this time. We are joined today by Patrick Lane, the Senior Vice President of Corporate Partnerships at Benzinga. He joins us remote from Detroit, Michigan. Patrick, we would love to hear kind of what you're seeing on the ground in Detroit, how your day-to-day life has been impacted by coronavirus.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I think for the most part, it's probably very similar to what the rest of the country and perhaps the rest of the world is seeing, right? Most of us are remote. So we have a phrase at Benzinga. I'm not sure if we coined it, probably not, but the phrase build from home. That's what we're doing right now. We're building from home. Our work has not stopped. But, you know, obviously we're going to take every precaution to protect ourselves and our families, as well as our colleagues, right? And, you know, this virus is definitely one that has polarized the members of this country in terms of those who believe it really is an existing threat that we need to take all the proper precautions to avoid, and some who are on the beach in Miami right now on spring break. So I think for the most part, what we're seeing here in Michigan is a closure of all the major institutions, the schools, the workplaces for the most part, churches, things of that nature, to send people home and keep them isolated until this thing passes or at least subsides. I think for the most part, we've acted as swiftly as possible, at least since it made its way to our shores.
Well, we really appreciate you being here, Patrick. There is a lot of uncertainty posed at this time by this pandemic, and it's important to have these kinds of discussions where we can address the concerns that people have. And we're talking specifically about the impact on cannabis investments from coronavirus. Love to get some of your initial thoughts on that topic.
Yeah, and I think it's a really, really interesting subject matter right now. I mean, the coronavirus is affecting everything. It's affecting pretty much the global economy on a macro level. So if you're looking at cannabis, let's broaden for a moment and talk about the general state of affairs and say stocks are plunging, oil prices are plunging, the VIX, the volatility index, is at an all-time high. Interest rates are at an all-time low and could potentially go negative. So I think it's helpful to know that while everyone's looking at the stock market and wondering what the impact is going to be on their own investments, their own 401ks, which obviously I think we're all in the middle of that bloodbath at the moment, what I see is a bit of a silver lining, right? And, you know, I heard you guys talking a second ago about the bubble and whether it's burst yet. I think it's important to note that I don't think it has. I think Bob's absolutely right about that. I think that we haven't quite seen the bottom of where this is going to go. But again, I look at that as a certain measure of uncertainty that also carries with it great opportunity. I think we all know the value of the cannabis market to this, to the global economy and certainly the national one. I think the fact that many states are listing it in essential services as they're asking people to shelter in place is a huge turning point and one that's probably not getting enough attention right now as we in the media are covering it. If it's classified as essential services, it must be a valuable commodity in a lot of different ways, right? So legalization should be impacted by that when all of this is said and done. Not to mention the fact that, you know, once we see the bottom of where the market goes, these nascent industries and the ones that are clearly poised to break out are going to need support, especially from the federal level, in order to bloom. And God knows we'll need the economic lift at that point. So again, I don't look at it as a truly negative thing in the long term. I think we wait it out. But I certainly think for investors in this space and who are looking at this space, you should be looking at this as a bargain opportunity. There are really good companies, some of which we'll see at the end of this and some of which we probably won't in terms of who survives. But I will say that now is the time to dive in and to take a real hard look and maybe even place some capital in some of these stocks that will obviously recover and will be better off in the long term.
No, Patrick, that's a really great perspective. I think that what's interesting to me, we talked a moment ago about health and wellness perspectives of investment and looking at, especially during a pandemic, the fact that you'd want to invest in things that promote health and wellness, and certainly cannabis fits into that box. But it also fits into the vice industries box, which during any time of crisis, whether that's war, certainly in this time, when you look at cannabis as a potential vice industry, how do you think the investment world will view cannabis investments coming out of this? Is it a combination of those two? Is it more vice and health and wellness? Or is there another angle to this that you see that encourages people to invest into this marketplace?
Well, health and wellness, that's a really good point. Health and wellness is the most obvious angle when it comes to investment and a really what could signify a good investment in this space. You know, and so there are certain companies, especially within the Fortune 500, who are clearly poised, especially once federal legalization occurs, to really, really dive in and make an impact, right? And I'm thinking more so those in the pharmaceutical space, right? But I think when it comes to opportunity, especially as you mentioned, vice, just look at the stocks today, right? Look at the volatility and look at them all up currently, right? And who knows where that will end at the end of the day. But sales are through the roof, right? I think, you know, in the three largest markets, I think it's up something like 160% right now. And that's nothing to be snoozed at, right? It's important for everyone to understand that this is something that is, I mean, I hate to use this term, but it's somewhat recession-proof in terms of what this industry is showing on a sort of larger economic scale. So, yes, as investors are looking at this, I think the play is clearly going to be the CPG space long-term. It's going to be those Fortune 500 companies who are looking to jump in, who are already sort of circling the market and just sort of waiting for their opportunity to dive in. And I think you're absolutely right, Bob. Health and wellness for sure. Those sort of vice stocks right now, some of which are clearly branding themselves in that direction, they're not necessarily hurting today.
When you look at different technologies that that one might invest in or develop, and certainly some of the Canadian publicly traded companies had focused a lot on technology development. I've read things about companies that make dry powder products or isolated forms of cannabis compounds as the ones that will really come out of this thing on top, because that product is perhaps, at least in theory, based on what we know now, not as susceptible of spoilage and or being tainted because it's not in a liquid format or it's not in a consumer format that otherwise would be susceptible to something that the coronavirus would attach itself to. Do you view any particular sector, product line, or technology as something that really is a top mover or top driver from an investment perspective as we begin to get through this and come out of it on the back end?
It's tough to say. I think it's still a bit early to say which of the brands or sort of products themselves will be least impacted by this. What I will say is that I think some are better positioned than others, right? I think obviously as the CDC and other health organizations are coming out and saying, you know, listen, if you are vaping, right, that could potentially be, you know, just as dangerous as a pre-existing condition, right? So that is something that I expect to affect that market. I will say that, you know, those isolates, those tinctures and powders, those are most likely going to weather the storm a bit better. But again, tough to say at this point. I think we're going to find that out in probably the next week or two.
When you think about the cannabis bubble and you think about the investment, of course, that's comprised of both public investment opportunities, and we talked a little bit about that, the stock market, if you will. And then you look at the private side, and the private side has been, while it's been robust over the last several years, it certainly hasn't tapped into mainstream private investment that might be institutional in nature, especially as it relates to the marijuana side of the industry. So if you look at the private versus the public side, we've commented briefly on the public side. You know, the stocks are going to be down. The stocks in the cannabis LPs out of Canada and many of the multi-state operators, they were down anyway. So, you know, in fact, even some of the pharmaceutical companies like GW, their stock was, if I recall correctly, in the $96 or $97 per unit range, within the last week before this really started to affect the market, and people were saying, now's the time to buy, now's the time to buy. So you've got that public side, but what about the private side? What about the private side? How does the private side look at opportunities in this space right now that's not going to be driven just by press releases and what's so-called sexy? What is the topic that you think the private side will drive itself to as we begin to emerge on the other side of this thing?
And just to clarify, you mean the private equity funds, right? The private institutional investors.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I would say to you that, you know, these guys, they've always been a bit cagey when it comes to this industry, right? They want to place capital. They're very interested in the opportunities that are there. From what we hear, especially from those family offices and the institutions that are sort of biding their time as they look for the right opportunity, they're certainly going to prioritize those companies that have the best story. So I think branding is super important right now. And I don't mean what you slap on a label. I mean a full brand strategy in how you plan to roll out, in what markets you're concentrating on first. I think what we've seen, and especially as it relates to our friends in Canada, and not to rag on them for a second, but we've seen a real difference in terms of level of operations, right? I think there's been a big, big foray into let's raise as much money as we can and attain and develop as many assets as we can in order to be the biggest, the quickest. And I think that many of them are hurting because of that strategy, and probably because they've been focused less on what story are we actually telling as a company? How are we furthering the industry and helping our clients, our patients, our consumers? And are we giving them what they want? You know, I think, again, quality of product has also been a deterrent in Canada. So when it comes to how we move forward, and those companies, especially on the private side, that are going to succeed, it's going to be those who know how to tell a story. And it's going to be those who are, you know, I'd say probably more aligned with the ancillary space than plant touching at the moment.
Patrick, I'm interested in, with all the events that have been canceled, I know Benzinga is a major event holder in the space. Can you tell me kind of what the forecast is on your side for what the future months look like?
Absolutely. First, I think it's helpful to say that, you know, many of the event operators out there are in communication with one another, right? So, you know, we like to play in the same sandbox with all those other events out there, especially those on focused on the investor side, the business side of the industry. And we're all in the same boat, right? We want to add value. We want to help the industry. And we want to help our companies and our clients that are starving for capital and looking for growth and ready to scale their businesses, even in this very, very uncertain time. So nothing has changed for us in that mentality. The execution of it is shifting, right? So the event in Detroit that we were going to host on April 1st has been postponed to August. And we'll obviously keep an eye on how all of this goes and, you know, make decisions based on that. Other events that we're running are moving to a virtual format. The Toronto event that we planned on hosting June 1st and 2nd, you know, we think it'll be cutting it a bit close in terms of what the CDC is saying here in the States about 8 weeks of no events over 50 people, and then to reevaluate at that time. That would bring us to mid-May, and I doubt many people are going to want to be in a room with 1,000 people right after that ban is lifted. So that event will be virtual, and we'll be looking at our events in the fall and obviously making decisions as we get closer to those dates. But from my perspective, and I think probably what a lot of others are doing, is looking at how to add value virtually. I think for those companies raising money, you know, we at Benzinga, I'm sure others, are rolling out a virtual deal room series where we take maybe a couple of companies maximum and a group of investors, introduce them to one another, and ideally keep that flow of capital, albeit a shortened one, flowing. this industry needs it. These companies are still growing and still needing to operate even in these times. So we're going to do our best to continue to add value, albeit in a sort of a different format.
Well, we'll certainly be following that and are very interested in learning more about the deal desk, the virtual deal desk scenario. I think that's an excellent use of distance networking, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that in this space. One of the things I just wanted to get to before we run out of time here was, if you are a company or an investor and you're sitting on cash right now, and that's not going to be the majority, but there's certainly a fair amount of people that are, do you sit on your cash? Is cash king going forward? Or do you look at that liquidity as an opportunity to invest and to, whether that's a public investment or private investment or direct operational investments, how do you perceive people that are liquid with cash, liquid with funds going forward? Not necessarily what's your recommendation. It's just, what do you see the tea leaves saying about cash going forward?
That's a really great question. And I'd say to answer, there are two schools of thought, and it's going to depend upon the company, right? There are plenty of companies out there, especially on the private side, that have the funding that they need right now to operate, to build whatever assets that they have under construction and to complete that. When it comes to the market in general, I think it would be wise to continue to look at other assets and potentially adding assets as the market is down, as stock prices, interest rates, oil prices, real estate prices are probably lower than they will be once we come out of this. I would imagine that now is a good time to add assets, but I would always caution against moving too quickly, right? I think that, you know, when it comes to some of these companies, especially again, going back to what we've seen in Canada, and with some of these MSOs that have probably jumped into more state markets than they could operate, I think it could open you up as a company to some really tough decisions down the road, in terms of other deals that you have to take. And I'm referring to some of these funding deals that we've seen. I hate to classify it this way, but I've heard one of my colleagues use this term, these kind of rip your face off deals that are happening right now just to keep the lights on in some of these companies. And I think it's because instead of focusing on, you know, a measured development and a measured addition of assets, we're looking at moving too quickly. We're looking at growing too fast, moving into new markets when perhaps the operations can't keep up with that level of aggressive growth strategy. So I think to your question, cash is king at the moment. I think that anyone that has that is better positioned to survive and to potentially be on top when this thing does turn around. But I would say, again, look for those sneaky deals, those really good investment opportunities that maybe while the market down, if the timing is right.
Looking at distressed assets, looking at things that people no longer need, recognizing that one man gathers but another man spills, those create asset acquisition opportunities, ways to expend that cash. So no, that's really good good perspective there. So
yeah, Patrick, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and share your perspective with us during this unprecedented time that we are in right now. It's important to keep that perspective that even though the markets are in flux right now and everything is shaken up, we are going to get to the other side of this, and there is opportunity along the way. Thank you for joining us today, Patrick.
My pleasure, you guys. Again, uncertainty equals opportunity. Thanks for having me on.
Well said, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minutes special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.